Nutrition. Are we drowning in a sea of bad information that could be harming our health? What if what we think is right is actually wrong? How do you make the correct decisions with bad data? All this and more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Create Your Own Life Show. I am your host, Jeremy Ryan Slate, the CEO and founder of Command Your Brand. We help clients to combat cancel culture by placing them on the right podcasts and new media. You can grab our new PR book, ranked number one in all PR books on Amazon, over at bestpodcastbook.com. Reminder, if you're brand new to this channel, to like this video, leave a comment, and smash that subscribe button if you support liberty, freedom, and want to build a better future. And our guest today is somebody that has written a very, very intriguing book. It's called Unholy Trinity: How Carbs, Sugar, and Oils Make Us Fat, Sick, and Addicted, and How to Escape Their Grip. His name is Daniel Trevor. Daniel, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really love your work. I'm a big fan. So yeah.
So for people that may not be familiar with you and what you do, Dan, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do, man.
Yeah, sure. Here's the deal. A few years ago, I almost died of a heart attack.
Oh my gosh.
And it was a complete shocker because I thought I was a lean, symptom-free Mr. Healthier. So I thought, right? And what I discovered, having studied technical data throughout my life, I decided to take a dive into the medical science to find out, how could this happen to me? I'm Mr. Healthy, right? And what I discovered, absolutely, it really blew my mind and actually infuriated me, because what we've been told to eat for decades is killing us. And so I had to take that dive to find out not only how all that happened to me, and then after I did that and I discovered what I discovered, I decided I got to share this with the world. Because I know how to write. I'm fortunate that I'm just a lower class street kid from Philly who was fortunate to very early on learn how to study well. And if I wasn't like a wonderful student, but if it was something I was interested, I could conquer it, because I learned how to be expert in dictionaries and that kind of thing. And so, and after I had the heart attack, I was never more highly motivated to dive into something than I was then, right? And so, it's just the carbs, the sugar, and the oils. And what I mean by that is, when we say the carbs, we're talking about the industrially refined and processed grains, which they then turn into bread, pasta, cereal, crackers, biscuits, waffles, pancakes, chips, pretzels, rolls, pizza, tortillas, and on that way, right? And then we have the candy, cake, ice cream, soda, and so on. It's all the sugar, and everybody knows how. But and then there's the vegetable oils. And oh my God, I had no idea they were so deadly. They didn't even exist in the human diet until about 100 years ago. They were used as, and now there are some good oils that you can use, like olive oil, avocado oil, and so on. But there are certain, most of them that they sell, because they're so cheap, the safflower, sunflower, canola, soybean oil, and so they're deadly. They were used as machinery lubricant in the Industrial Revolution in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and they were considered a toxic waste. Somebody looked at a bucket of it and they said, "Hey, it looks like lard. Why don't we sell it to people? We can make money that way," right? And it was like, oh my God. And I have a whole chapter on that. I had no idea how deadly they were. But anyway, that's what happened there. And I know you wanted to talk about the U.S. dietary guidelines, about how they came about in the 1970s.
Well, let's start here too, because you give an interesting statistic that in 1930 the U.S. obesity rate was 1%, and today it's almost 50%, which is it's shocking to see that. You know, I'm here in New Jersey. You go to the beach, Daniel, and it's a little scary. Like, you're like, how are people this overweight, right? Like, you go to Europe and it's not as bad as what we have here, and I guess looking at that, like, how did we get to this point? Like where the obesity rate is up basically 49% in the last just around 100 years.
Well, it's amazing. It's a brilliant question. And actually, the result, my book that resulted from this is basically what you would call a comprehensive analysis or situation, a data evaluation and analysis of this. 1930, the obesity rate was 1%. We're now approaching 50%. That's 50x in less than 100 years. In the 1930s, the chronic disease rate was 7%. We're now it's over 70%. And you're going to say, what the hell is happening? Never before in human history has a population gotten so fat and so sick so fast. What's the cause of it? And so pulling a lot of strings, doing a lot of data analysis, I came up with, because I was looking to figure it out on my own, that it was the unholy trinity, the carbs, the sugar, the oils, these foods that were never in the human diet ever. And then we get up to, see what happened was, to give you a little bit of a background, sure. The history lead up to the U.S. dietary guidelines. I have a chart in the book. I have a lot of charts, graphs, images, that kind of thing, because I want to give the reader an easier time of it as they're going through. And I have a chart of the heart disease and heart attacks. It was going from bottom left to, it goes from 1900 to 1955, and it looks like this, right? And 1955, Eisenhower, our president, had a heart attack. And a lot of the men throughout the country were being taken in their prime of their life. We're going, what's going on? And so there was this researcher, unethical but very influential researcher. He had this idea called the diet heart hypothesis, and which was that it was the saturated fat and meat, butter, cheese, and so on that was clogging up the arteries. And that's what it was. When it turns out,
I read something about this morning on X, where somebody was saying that. Oh gosh, I forget the company now, but there was basically a payoff involved from the getting the saturated fat and something else were basically switched in the guidelines anyway.
Well, he was paid $200,000 by the U.S. government paid him, I forget which department, $200,000, which today is like about $5 million, right? This was unheard of. And he was a single researcher. And he had this idea that it was the fat and the saturated fats that clogged up the arteries. And it was kind of like people got the idea. It was kind of like a shower drain where you have the soap and the hair and the grease and the gook and it clogs up. And it's not like that at all, because what happens is the plaque that builds up is underneath the artery, not where the blood flows. That's called the lumen. And he had it all wrong. But it made sense to people. It reminds
me of interesting. I guess just for people listening, because I just want to break down this visual, because that's really interesting. So you have like a vein or an artery, right? And then you have the blood flows through it. You're talking about what actually happens is basically on the outside of it, away from where the blood happens, is what you're saying.
It happens inside, below the endothelial, which is the lining of the artery, right?
So like inside the wall of it, then, is what you're basically talking
yes,
about.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, cool.
Here's what they discovered years later when they had this new electron microscopy where they were able to get these teeny tiny cameras into the arteries and they could actually see what's going on. They discovered this thing called the glycocalyx. What's the glycocalyx? The glycocalyx is this fuzz-like lining of the arteries, and it acts as the first line of defense against what's called small, dense LDL particles, which are the deadly ones that can invade the artery wall, get stuck underneath, and they build up the plaque over time. Smoking, which was an epidemic in the 30s, 40s, 50s, destroys the glycocalyx. So it gets rid of that. And that was the cause of the epidemic of heart disease, right? And so
interesting.
Yeah, and I have a picture of the glycocalyx. I'll cover all this in chapter one because I like to give the whole history of how we got here.
Sure.
And so he had this incorrect hypothesis, the diet heart hypothesis, but he was very influential. And then it resulted in the 60s and 70s of all this non-fat, low-fat. And by the 70s, we got all these non-fat, low-fat foods. And here's the thing, and that's loaded with carbohydrates and sugar, right? The bigger destroyer of the glycocalyx is the carbohydrates from the grains, the processed grains and the processed sugars. So we're substituting smoking with something that's worse. The process, the unholy trinity, carbs, sugar, and the oils exacerbate the situation. So this led to, I mean, heart disease wasn't even a thing. Like in 1900, people mostly died of infectious diseases, pneumonia, tuberculosis, that kind of thing, right? The very first heart attack wasn't officially recorded until 1912. It wasn't something that people died from. I mean, I'm sure they, you know, throughout history, people died from it, but it was never noticed or anything like that. It just wasn't a thing. And then by the 1950s, it was the biggest killer. And then it continued that because they started buying into this low-fat, non-fat. And the reason for that is basically these evolutionarily developed bodies that we have, we're used to, our diet consists of, for millions of years, of what we could catch, kill, and eat nose to tail, right? That was our diet. And what we might pick off a tree or a vine, that kind of thing, but only when it was in season. The berries were only, the fruit was only in season, but it was mostly animals, nose to tail. We didn't even eat grains until about 99,000 years ago. And that's like a blink of the eye in the eons of time. So anyway, they came up with this U.S. dietary guidelines. And let's see, I have it here. Just so you know, I've got two large monitors here from my old trading days.
I'm in the same boat here too, because I'm looking for like I was looking for that article I mentioned earlier too. So here's the article I was talking about while you're finding that. American Heart Association was paid off by Procter & Gamble to say heart disease was caused by saturated fat, not seed oils. Very, very interesting stuff.
Yeah, no, they gave them $1.5 million, which today would be about $32 million. I cover that in the book too. So I have that. I cover that. See, besides my book being a how to go from, you know, being overweight or metabolically unhealthy to get into superior metabolic health, it's also a bit of an expose on the other unholy trinity, big food, big pharma, and big medicine. Now, having said that, yeah. I've got to say that I'm sure there's beautiful, wonderful people amongst all of them. It's just at the higher corporate levels, it's more profits over people. Let's just put it that way.
And I think that's correct, right? Like, I think if you look at most professions, there's a lot of, they're made up by mostly good people, right? But I think you have a small percentage of those that do things for money and power and control. And because of that, like they go to those positions where it's easier to get money, power, and control, right?
Oh my God. It's just, you know, I was, it's so wild. I was just covering this on, recently, about last month, I was on Dr. Ken Berry's podcast, YouTube, and he asked me about this. What are the big food companies and what are all these, you know, big companies thinking? I said, well, look, here's the thing. Goldman Sachs, the international banker, they had one of their analysts do a white paper. I can't remember the name of it, but it was about, it was for their biotech and pharma companies. And they were covering the idea that creating cures is not good for the bottom line. Right?
That's true.
And one of the examples they gave, or the main example they gave, was the big pharma company Gilead Sciences. They came up with this blockbuster drug called Harvoni, which gave a 96 to 99% cure rate for hepatitis C. And it went from $12 billion, and then within a couple of years, it was down to like 75% lower, and it continued its descent after that. And so while creating cures may be good for society, it's not good for the bottom line, so knock it off. So I'm sure a lot of that mentality goes over to the big food companies who also have shareholders. And they, you know, there's people at the top that want to keep all that going. So it's pretty sad that we have to go for profits over people. But it is true. It just seems that there's a frailty amongst humanoids that when you put a human being next to money, they tend to kind of look the other way and that kind of thing. So corruption can occur, you know. So what are you going to do?
So I guess bringing us back to where we were, you were looking something up on that other monitor there.
Yeah, it was the U.S. Dietary Guidelines. And what they are is they came in the 70s, and it was all low fat, non-fat, you know, eat a small amount of the meats and cheeses and stuff. But the base of they had this pyramid, right? And the base of the pyramid was all these deadly carbohydrates in the form of, you know, cereals and pasta and rice and all this stuff, right? And so what happened was, see, the reason why those are so deadly is because, and I didn't know this too, because I was totally bought into the propaganda and the bullshit of, if I can use that, I don't know if you have to edit that or not.
No, we can go with it, man. Be who you are here. As long as it's not in the first 30 seconds on YouTube, we're in good shape.
Okay. Well, anyway, the heart healthy, air quotes, whole grains. And I didn't know that the grains in any, whether they're processed or whether they're whole grains or whatever, they turn into sugar after mm-hmm. you ingest them. And I didn't know any yes. of that. And so I was totally sold. Well,
that's the same thing with something like a sugar additive, like a sugar substitute, like aspartame, right? Like, essentially, it's not a bad product unless it's heated to 80 degrees, which your body is more than 80 degrees. And so it's not such a good thing, right? Like, I think we don't always consider the effects of what something starts and where it goes.
Exactly. And the reason why these U.S. dietary guidelines were so deadly is because they're so far reaching. They're so influential. They are used by, they're followed by the U.S. Department of Education for all students' school lunch programs, the entire U.S. military, patients in hospitals, feeding programs for the elderly. You have different welfare programs like WIC, you know, which is, Women, Infant, and Children, and all those products. In fact, $10 billion, the biggest part of welfare, food stamps and SNAP programs, go to diabetes water, also known as soda, right? It's just crazy, oh right? Gosh. So these, they're just, and incredibly, they're also recommended by the American Medical Association and the American Diabetes Association, which is just wild. And there's a gal who I've gotten to know, and her name is Nita Teicholz. And she is a New York Times bestselling author, amazing woman. And in fact, her book was called The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. And it was book of the year. I mean, it was just very influential. And she was the one she was one of the big ones that brought the idea to the forefront, that this whole low fat, non-fat, it was just a bunch of nonsense. So, and I actually, she's to give a little plug for the book, she wrote this wonderful endorsement for my book. And so you can find her up there, and it's all at danieltrevor.com, all the endorsements and so forth. But anyway, she also started this organization called Nutrition Coalition, which is a lobbying group trying to get all this stuff, trying to get some transparency into the nutrition and what's going on. And they did an investigation of the committee members of the U.S. Dietary Guidelines. See, they update them every 5 years. We're now in the 2020 to 2025 period, and they're getting ready to bring the 2025 coming up. So they did an analysis, and I'm going to read the results. It says, results. Our analysis found that 95% of the committee members had COI, conflicts of interest, with the food and or pharmaceutical industries, and that particular actors, including Kellogg, Abbott, Kraft, Mead Johnson, General Mills, Danone, and others, had connections with multiple members. And they found that, in other words, of the 20-member advisory committee that developed these latest dietary guidelines, 19 of them had industry ties and received financial backing. Mm-hmm. You can also read the word bribes in there. From sure. large corporations involved in processed food manufacturing and the pharmaceutical drug industry. I mean, you know, it's just a scandal that we don't know this.
If you appreciate the work that we do here and you want to support this show, the biggest way you can do that is by supporting the products that we know, use, and love, and that I recommend for you here on the show. The first that I want to talk about is MyPillow, literally one of my favorite products. The MyPillow Classic is what I use every single night. It's handled a lot of my neck pain, a lot of my back pain. As you guys know, I've been a competitive powerlifter since my early 20s. I've retired from that, but I still take pretty good care of myself, and I'm still pulling some heavy weights as I pulled 500 last week on deadlift. And our favorite product when we travel is actually the MyPillow Travel Pillow, and it's one of the things that we actually give to absolutely everybody. It is a great product to fall asleep on, so if you want to go to mypillow.com/CYOL, there's some really great holiday deals over there. You can get up to 66% off of select products. Also, one of the biggest changes in my life over the years has been handling a lot of the parasites in my body. A number of years ago, I did a cleanse with Dr. Jason Dean, and we removed these things called liver fluke from my body. They were actually eating my liver. It was kind of crazy. And every few months, I do either a parasite cleanse or his full moon detox that he's doing right now. So if you want to head over to bravetv.store/CYOL and grab some of his amazing products over there. I know he has a great holiday special going on right now as well. Support our sponsors. They help the show to continue, and they help us to do what we're doing. And we could not do it without you. And you could do it just by using the power of the purse and supporting the products that we love. Thanks.
This is the same problem we have with clinical trials, right? Like many times clinical trials are they go through different journals, right? But a lot of the journals, they've been basically bought by a lot of these drug companies. So the journals are putting out studies that are, you know, the sample sizes of people aren't big enough because they really can't figure out what's happening. They're controlling the results. They're not doing double blind results. So it's basically just a product push. And I think it's similar to what you're talking about with nutrition here. It's kind of like the fox's guarding the hen house, Daniel. You know, it really is.
You're exactly right on that, Jeremy. Oh, my God. It's just like, you know, it's like I point out in the beginning of the book. After the introduction, I have this important note, and I tell them, look, I have more scientific citations than any other health book out there because I knew I needed to have that backup. Right? I have 1,227, yes. And most books, if they have any, they have 200 or 300. And so I say to the reader, I know you might be thinking, without any formal university credentials in medicine, organic chemistry, why should I trust you? I tell them, don't. Just think of me as a friendly relay point of what the best of modern 21st century science has to offer for your health and wellness, and fix yourself. I did. You can too. In other words, none of this is my opinion. This is the top double-blind, you know, randomized controlled trials, meta-analyses. None of this is, and I made sure I didn't pay any attention to studies that had funding from big food, big pharma, or big medicine, because they're just so influential. You know, like in big food companies, in their corporate offices throughout the world, they have biochemical geniuses figuring out, okay, so what is it that we can put into the ingredients that makes them crave more so they eat the whole bag instead of half the bag, right? And so, again, none of it's my opinion, and I've been really blessed with getting these wonderful endorsements. And even, what's his name, Dr. Philip Ovadia. I don't know if you know who he is. He's a cardiologist, and he might be a good guest for you to have on. He's a cardiologist, but he's also done over 3,000 heart operations. And he asked me, I was on his last month, his podcast, and he said, and the question was, you know, besides validating to me, but it was very revealing as well. He said something like, how is it that you, as a non-physician, were able to figure this all out when 99% of medical doctors can't or won't? It was like, I'm thinking, wow, what a question that was. So we explored that, and he had his opinions, yeah. And I had mine. I think a lot of them get the idea or have the mentality, and I don't know this. I haven't done a survey of medical doctors, but I think they get the mentality that, well, if they didn't teach it to me in medical school, it must not be that important for me to know about. So why do I need to know about nutrition or diet or any of that? Then you have, on the other hand, you take your little poochie to the vet. What's the first question the vet's asking? Or one of the first questions, what are you feeding, little Poochie?
Yeah.
When's the last time you heard any doctor saying, so what's your diet like?
I think one of the major problems too, and you know, we could do a whole podcast on this too, is you go back to, you know, Rockefeller control of medical schools. We went from, you know, homeopathy, you know, treating things more naturally, to allopathy, right? Treating things with a drug. And that becomes a major part of the problem. But I guess, you know, kind of looking at what this whole landscape looks like. You know, you realize there was a lot of things wrong. You realize we had a lot of bad data. So I guess, how did you confront this then? Like, how did you figure out what's the right data, what's the wrong data? And then based on this, like, how do you use this data to then to kind of turn your scene around?
Well, I'm very good at analyzing information. I mean, I can read a scientific study just as well as any doctor can. I may have to look up a lot of words that they already learned in medical school. But since, like I told you, I've become expert at using a dictionary, and it can be it's a painstaking process. But, you know, when you've just gotten confronted with the fact that you almost dropped the current body that you have, which is this one, and you still have more things to do. I want to see my daughters go down the aisle and have, you know, I want to be granddad and all that kind of thing. And so I have more to do. So I decided I needed to find out. So I really took the dive and just pulled things apart. And so, you know, you just have to do the analysis. And I've always been able to do an analysis, because I've studied technical data throughout my life and a lot of different things. And so I needed to apply it to myself. And so because I was sick and I didn't know it, because all of these major diseases are silent. Check this out. I didn't know. I mean, my first alarm that went off was the heart attack, which I almost died from. And so my research led me to find out that you can't have heart disease without having some level of a diabetic physiology. This was Dr. Joseph Kraft back in the 70s and 80s. He had a book back then. It was called The Diabetes Epidemic and You. He was the one that discovered, but his work was suppressed or ignored, or both. He was the one, after thousands of autopsies, he discovered that the process of type 2 diabetes is atherosclerotic. It's in the veins. It's in the arteries. So it turns out, with the proper testing, after I had the heart attack, I found out about all these different tests, and I thought, I got to get a benchmark where I could measure my future progress, 3 months, 6 months, and so forth down the line. So I did this one test, which revealed that I was a raging type 2 diabetic, and I didn't know it because, again, there's no symptoms.
Wow.
And that was the source root cause of my cardiovascular disease. It was also the source root cause of my non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is very deadly. And it was also the source of my osteoporosis, which I had no idea. And I have a chapter on all that in there too. It's on osteopenia and osteoporosis, because they're finding that because of the unholy trinity, it's dropping down into 35 to 50 year olds. It's getting lower and lower that people are getting osteoporosis, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. They're discovering in, you know, teenagers. And it's all because of the high fructose corn syrup. And I didn't know. That was in everything in my pantry. I'm looking at all the ingredients. I go, oh my God, it's there. Because the body can't process it. And the only place it processes is the liver. And it stores up there. And it's just horrible. So I had these four comorbidities. And I had to heal all that. And writing this how-to book and all the research I'd done, I was able to reverse all that and go from a heart attack to a six pack to stable plaque, you know? So, and the six pack wasn't even something that I was a goal. It's just that when you start eating more ancestrally, just let me add this one last thing in there.
Yeah, sure.
You start to look like a hunter gatherer. And none of them had bellies, right? They were all chiseled. And, you know, I have some guys in the book there's this one guy, he's a hunter-gatherer from 1900. And the guy is just ripped and chiseled. And I say, do you think this guy had a fitness center near him in 1900? it's just, you know, that's the way you look naturally when you eat an ancestral diet. So anyway, over to you.
Well, so let me ask you this then, because one of the things I found really interesting, because if there's been a lot of studies on this, that male testosterone is like substantially lower now than it was, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. And there's a lot of different causes that go into this. It's not a single cause thing. You can look at plastics that we're dealing with, all these different things we're dealing with. But one of the things I found really interesting is that you've said that low-fat diets can actually cause a lowering in this. And I guess, what does that relationship look like between testosterone rate and low-fat diets?
Well, I have a whole section on testosterone in the book because chapter 14, I call it Living La Vida Low Carb. Because people are asking me, what exactly are you doing? So I give the whole, you know, it's not a brag fest or anything, but I give a whole rundown of what I do. And I have a whole section on testosterone. And see, after age 40, males, as we age, we lose about 1% testosterone per year. And it just, and I have a graph in there that just shows you that what's going on. And there was a study because, again, I'm just relying on the studies. None of this is Daniel's opinion, right? And there was a study that were showing that how low-fat diets were pushing men's testosterone down. And that's, and then they said it started actually in the mid-20th century. And I say, well, what happened in mid-20th century? That's when the diet heart hypothesis with this guy Ansel Keys came in with the low-fat, non-fat, you know, all that nonsense. And that's when the decline in a big way started with men's testosterone. So I have, you know, 10 tips, 10 testosterone tips. I show you what to do to get it back, to reclaim your macho or whatever. Because, you know, if you've got low testosterone, as you age, you're 75% more likely to get Alzheimer's. I mean, there's when you start to lower your hormones, whether it's estrogen in women and testosterone in men, you start attracting the aging diseases. And that's why you want to maintain that as long as you can. And so that's what my whole, I must have 8 pages on that. So I give the whole scene on that. So anyway, yeah, there are a lot of external things like you were talking about, the plastics and so forth, but it's mostly from diet. People are fooled, just like Mark Twain said, what was the quote again? it's easier to fool people than to convince them they have been fooled. It's easier to fool people than to convince them they have been fooled, because he was a genius of common sense, you know, which is very little of these days.
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm curious if this came up in your work, because I know in Europe there's been a lot more like legislation against NGOs and that's non-governmental organization. I'm about synthetic foods and you know, like different, I forget the acronym now, but anyway, like a lot of synthetic foods and things like that in Europe. I'm curious if you've seen in your research if the rates of these things are actually lower in Europe as compared to America, since it seems like they're a little bit more food aware than we are here.
Yeah, well, this may get a little political, but see, the United States has been a target for several decades to bring down the West, mainly the United States. And they do that through, well, you know, it's just, I'll watch what I say here because I don't want the overlords of the World Economic Forum and the WHO and the YouTube gods to come down on your channel or anything. So I'll be careful in what I say. You know, I have this chapter in the book, chapter 12, it's called Eat the Right Meat and Help the Planet. Because, you know, everything now is like, oh, plant-based diets. And I ask, why is it that the most rich and powerful elite of the planet, i.e. those that fly into Davos for the World Economic Forum meetings, are pushing plant-based diets when throughout recorded history, those were reserved for slaves, prisoners, and foot soldiers?
Wow.
As you know, the Roman soldiers, they marched on barley. Hey, the elites always had as much meat as they wanted, but and the WEF, they even say, I have this in the book too, this isn't a tweet that they had. Oh, well, meat will still be available in the future, but it'll be a rarely done snack or treat. And I'm thinking, well, thank you very much, Klaus. What a slave master, right? So Klaus Schwab, as you know, he was the one who famously said, in the future, you will own nothing, but you will be happy.
He also said, anyway, we will eat the bugs.
Anyway, eat the bugs and be happy. Anyway, so I go into the whole climate bullshit. Again, we're talking about the Mark Twain. It's easier to be fooled. It's easier to fool people than it is to convince them they have been fooled. And I go into all that and debug all of that. I mean, it's just they come back to all their scientific consensus, and you got to go with the scientific consensus. And, you know, I mean, what was it, 1633, Galileo, our brilliant astronomer, when he discovered that the Earth was not the center of the universe and it revolved around the sun and the sun was going around all these other things, he was in prison for life because he went against the scientific consensus. And I'll bet if he was on YouTube back then, they would have banned him too.
Yeah, he'd be like Alex Jones, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I debunk all that, and people don't know, especially if they're under 50, they don't know the last dozen times they tried to scare us to death. I mean, just let me give you just a few examples, which I also have in this chapter too. It's in 1970, they said, oh, by 1980, there will be 100 people that will starve to death due to overpopulation. These people are keyed into this whole thing of overpopulation on a wildly underpopulated planet because it's mostly wasteland. But anyway, that when that didn't happen, they said in 1980, they said, oh, there's going to be we're going to lose 1 billion people by the year 2000 because of global freezing. And when that didn't happen, they went to global warming. And then when that didn't work, they said, hey, well, let's change it to climate change. That way, if it goes up or down, we're good. These people are just – and then it was in 2004, I think it was Al Gore that predicted that, the polar caps were going to all melt and all the cities on the coasts were going to be 100 feet underwater and it surfs up in Vegas.
And well, wild though too, because I remember growing up, my mom would always remind me, like, hey, you know, Earth Day was started because they thought we were going into an ice age. And it's so wild that, like, I guess not only that, you know, people don't research that stuff, but at the same time, like, they believe what they're spoon fed. Like, I think we've forgotten to think, Daniel. I figured we've forgotten how to think.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And even with regard to that, there wasn't even a study. I have that in there too. 2023, I think it was last year or the year before, 2022, where they found that not only is there not a shrinking of the ice caps, but there's 2,200 and some miles of more ice than there was when he made that prediction. Over 2,200 more miles of ice than there was before. So, you know, look, they're trying to scare us into all these different things, and they want us to eat bugs instead of the meat. But there is a way to, you know, regenerative agriculture and farming is the way to go. And the people in the know really understand that. But look, again, their stated ideal global population is 500,000. So they have a lot of the weaning of the herd, and they think of us as ants, and they want to clear out the ants. Anyway, I know that sounds all political, but it's kind of like in your vein.
No, but it makes sense, right? Like, if it makes sense, it's why it's elites want to save resources for themselves. I think that's a big part of it. But I guess, you know, like in everything we've discussed and everything we've learned, if you could leave people with, I guess, somewhere between one and three key points, what would you tell them are kind of the most important things, you know, that they should know based on, you know, what you've learned and kind of the data we've chatted about today?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have to plug my book a little bit, which they can find at danieltrevor.com. It went to number one for heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and longevity.
Wow.
And the only reason I'm plugging it is because, look, you don't get rich writing health books. But I have become very wealthy in hearing back from people all over the world, all over the place. You name the country, I'm hearing from them. Wow, this is great. Thank you very much. Why doesn't my doctor know this? Get the book and specifically look at chapter 22. Well, read the whole book, but chapter 22, I had Dr. Ford Brewer. He's an internationally acclaimed preventive medicine doctor out of Johns Hopkins. And he's the king of preventing heart attacks, strokes, and all the other diseases that of modernity. And I asked him to write chapter 22, which turns out to be, what are the most important blood tests and scans that anyone can buy? Because if you go to your doctor, you say, hey, I want this. He might say, you don't need that. You don't need that. The only reason he's saying you don't need it is because he doesn't know what it is and wouldn't know how to interpret it anyway. So, all right. So you can buy them. I show you how you can buy them online. You got to, you know, you pay for it yourself without needing a doctor's prescription. That way you yourself can find out if you got something lurking, ready to pounce, that maybe coincides with what your parents had or Uncle Joe. You know, you got it running in your family and, you know, hey, I got to avoid that. Or you find out you're just fine, or somewhere in between that needs attention. So my biggest message is, don't be like me, number one. Find out what's going on inside you with the proper testing, and emphasis on the word proper, and avoid the unholy trinity. So you got to get tested. And like Dr. Ford calls his chapter 22, what is it? Don't guess, test. Because the only way you're going to know, because again, all of these silent, all these major diseases that are taking people out, Alzheimer's, you know, when you have a diabetic physiology, and most people do, and they don't know it because there's no symptoms, that's what opens it up to all the inflammation that causes the heart attacks, the strokes, the amputation from diabetic neuropathy, the sleep apnea, the PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, blindness, all kinds of diseases that start with the inflammation that's from hyperinsulinemia. That's just a fancy medical term that just stands for hyper is too much insulin in the blood. Emia is in blood, hyperinsulinemia. And that's where the inflammation starts and so on. So find out where you are. Very importantly, in 2019, there was a big study. It was a 7-year study, and they found that only 12% of the population are metabolically healthy. That means the other 88% are not. In a more recent study in 2022, this was at a Journal of American College of Cardiology, which is the top place on the planet for cardiology. And they found that it's like more than 55,000 people, right? And they found that it's now down to, what was it? 6.8% of the population is metabolically healthy, meaning that the other 93.2% are metabolically unhealthy. So most people don't know it. Look around, you see the obesity rates and the overweight, and it's just, it's a shame. People just don't get the education. So that was the purpose of my book, to wake people up to say, look, if you just eliminate those three, you'll get out of the metabolic disease that you have, and you'll turn things around and just do some research. And I've written the book in a simple, you know, easy to read for the average reader of health and wellness. And I wrote it for like my Uncle Joe or my brother Dave, because they're not technically oriented, but I want the average reader to understand this is what's happening when you eat these foods, and this is why you're in the shape that you're in. So get the testing and danieltrevor.com, and you'll be able to see all the, I have a couple of videos up there. I have a short, 7-minute video that tells my story, what happened to me, and gives you some of the alarming statistics that you've heard in a little bit here with me. So those are three things that I would say right now. Test, don't guess.
Very cool. Daniel Trevor, I definitely appreciate you coming on today, man. We'll definitely have to do this again soon. And for people that are checking out this channel for the first time, reminder to like this video, leave us a comment, and smash that subscribe button if you support liberty, freedom, and want to build a better future. Have a great day, everybody, and we'll definitely see you back here again.